one. This is Dean with the Two Party Podcast, and I'm on here, and I might pronounce your name wrong, but I'm going to try it. Dunya Stewart McNeil.
Dunya, but other than
Dunya.
That.
Ah, I'm like, I can't win a name yet. I always fail. But so we're on here with her. She is an author of a book called Let's Visit the Solar System. And it is if I'm not mistaken, it is a youth children's book.
Yep, that's right.
And it is out now. I found it on Amazon. I've actually got pulled up on another screen, just looking at different information. So I'm going to let her explain who she is. Tell us a little bit about her background, herself, and then we'll just get into what encouraged you to write the book. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm an ex-tutor. I'm a massive nerd. I love science. And I'm a mum. When my baby was born, I think it was a massive 6 months old, I decided he needs to know everything.
Right.
I don't want him finding out, you know, on the streets about the solar system. So I wrote him a book all about the solar system, about the different phases of the sun, about the galaxies, how they're formed, everything. And then realized it would actually do well as a book. Mm-hmm. Get told that's way too much information for a little child to have. So I had to tailor it down. I selected just the solar system and focused on the planets, and had an amazing, my illustrator's amazing. Her husband is an amateur astronomer, and he works as a learning director. So he knew the right level. So he was coaching me and helping me write it. And yeah, it's like three people who are all nerds and love science came together to write this book. And my illustrator did all the pictures. And it's just to help, it's to make kids passionate about science. It's not just teaching them, it's trying to give them something exciting about each planet to make them want to learn more.
Yeah, and that's important, you know. I remember growing up as a kid very vaguely. It's been a long time, but I do. I remember growing up as a kid, and I was into everything. My mom couldn't keep me out of stuff. If there was some kind of electronic device, I had to take it apart, put it back together. She could barely keep a radio in the house. and space was always something that got it, no matter what. I think as humans, you know, space is just this big, immense unknown. And I think for me, it was always as a kid, space was like just like the most amazing thing, because you really just didn't know what was there. And then we'd hear about new discoveries, and then that was even more amazing because there's some new thing we didn't know about. So what really pushed you into writing this specific book, as far as for your child, but more or less, like why was this the chosen topic?
I think it's going to start back to when I was about 16 years old. I'm from England, and in England we have a important exams called the GCSEs. And I was studying, it's the night before my GCSE exam. I've got ADHD, so naturally the night before was the perfect time to start studying.
Last minute.
And I was going through the textbook, and I found this whole section about space and how the sun was created. Talked about deuterium and all this exciting stuff. Talking about how the planets were created from the sun. And I was amazed. I just should have been studying. And technically this was part of the studying, but we'd never learned it at school. Mm-hmm. And I spent about 3 hours reading through it, memorizing it for fun. Got very lucky that it came up in the exam, so got a really good grade. But I remember being so annoyed that this was never covered at school. No one had ever mentioned about the planets or anything exciting about them. It was just, oh, there are planets in space.
Right.
Didn't actually occur to me to learn more about them. And yeah, from then I've always sort of been annoyed and said, if I have kids, they're going to learn everything. They're going to learn about deuterium. They're going to learn how the sun is formed. They're going to learn about the planets. They're going to learn about electrons and neutrons and protons. And all of the children's books that I saw about the solar system were a little bit too babyish. They weren't really talking about the planets. They were more like, we have planets in the sky.
Right.
Mars is a red planet, but I wanted a story with exciting stuff, talking about volcanoes on Venus, the moons on Saturn.
Yeah.
And wanted that for my kids, so that's something to encourage them into wanting to learn more about it.
Yeah. And that makes total sense. You know, like a prime example, like you just said, is, you know, a lot of the books you do see for children and stuff, it basically focuses on, you know, the red planet, the planet with rings, the sun is bright, the moon is, you know, comes up at night and it's a reflection. You get the basics, but you never really get into kind of more like what is a more descriptive or geographic look of a planet. And so you kind of, the book I'm looking at it on, I'm actually looking at the Amazon kind of the teaser version of it. And it kind of gives you, you know, a lot better descriptions in a fun way.
Yes.
And I like that.
It's not overloading children. It's got one, some of them have as many as two facts on a page. It's very easy reading.
Mm-hmm.
About the easy reading thing, it was a lot more. There's a lot more information in that. That was a bit where I got told kids won't like that. Stick down to one or two. So I had to sort of choose between like 10 amazing facts on each planet and just choose one or two.
Yeah.
It was like choosing between the love of my children. It's like, oh, which right. is your favorite?
It's like, don't make me choose.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it, you're right. It is really illustrated. Yep. Amazing. I mean, it's great pictures. To me, if I was the kid in me is looking at it, I'm like, this is a fun book. It makes me smile. Yep. Makes me happy to look at it. And that's you know, obviously what you want to have for a children's book. You want it to grab their attention. So the illustrations are great. And tell us a little bit about the character that leads the story.
It's a little alien called Sebastian.
Okay.
When I started writing the book, it was a bit... Well, I'm not gonna say it was a bit. It was bland. It was boring. It was just, you know, fact.
Next page, fact.
And I got told that the best books that children to help children learn has a little guide. So I just thought, well, I don't really want an animal guide because we're in space. So let me do an alien. And because
that would be frowned upon if we threw an animal up in space.
Exactly. We're not Russia in the 1960s. We can't just throw dogs. So I made it an alien, and I named it after my son because. Without my son, I really wouldn't have written the book at all.
That's cool. That's
my
cool.
son is Sebastian. He loves it. Every time that we buy another book, or somebody buys a book, we just both get excited. It's like, yay, another person knows about me. He gets so happy. He loves it.
I was going to say, that's probably pretty cool for him to be able to be like, you know, hey, cool. My name is in a book that's found worldwide.
Yep.
I think that's pretty amazing.
He just assumes that every kid has this, and it's hard to explain. No, most children aren't written in a book.
Yep. No, that's really cool. So how long has the book been out and how are we doing on sales so far?
We're doing okay on sales.
Yep.
There are two ways to publish a book. One is to find an agent, get a publisher, get them to do everything.
Yep.
Or you can do it yourself the really hard way. Get your own editor, your own illustrator, put it all out there yourself and sell it yourself.
Yep.
I decided to go with the hard way every single time.
Hey, it's more fun that way.
Exactly. So sales are doing well. They're not brilliant because I've got to sort of notify each person individually. Hi, here's my book. Mm-hmm. I don't have a big publishing or marketing arm of a publishing company to alert the whole world to my book. So it's a lot harder that way. Sales aren't as fast as I'd like, but I'm still impressed. I didn't think I'd sell, you know, more than 5 books.
Right.
And then I got to 3 figures and it was just like,
yay.
Yeah. So whereas if I'd gone through a traditional publishing company, I'd be on like the 4 figures or the 5 figures by now. I'm really quite happy with my 3 figures that I've done myself.
Yeah. And I hear a lot from different authors that several that have written several books. And what I tend to hear most is that they are very glad with the sales they got with going with a publisher and stuff.
Yep.
But they're like, it was a happy medium because we lost some of the profit that we would make.
Yeah, exactly. I know
that's, you know, obviously it's important. You want to write the book. That's your inspiration and your passion. But at the end of the day, you know, we're adults. It's about making some money too.
Yeah, it is. It's been out since I think the 18th of September. It's only been out 3 months. I'm really glad. I find the hardest bit is marketing. Every week I've got to do some set aside time to market.
Yes, and promote. Yep.
Like I said, I'm ADHD. So doing that is really hard. Even just once a week, it's like, no, I won't do it today. I'll do it tomorrow. Then it's the end of the week. And I'm just like, I've just missed all this opportunity to market. So that's hard for me. I'm also writing other books. So this is book one. I have book two is currently being illustrated. and that's all about the sun and how it starts off as a nebula, becomes a protoplanetary disk where the planets are formed, how it goes into a T-Tauri star to the sun that we have now, a main sequence star, all the way to its end.
Very cool.
And I just thought kids would love that. They'd love to know that the sun has a beginning, a middle, and an end, just like everything, and gets them that scientific mind of let's question everything.
Yeah. And I mean, especially like you said, for kids that are really science minded or space minded, to start out with a book that kind of explains the general solar system and then jump into a book that's more dives into the actual each the sun or each planet or a specific about space. I think that's really cool to give them that avenue.
Yep, definitely. I've found that kids really enjoy it. And the parents, I'm getting lots of really good reviews from parents with, I didn't know all these facts. And it's like, we should have learned this at school. Why aren't we learning this fun, exciting things at school?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking on Amazon right now. I was scrolling through a couple different pages that have your book available, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And I mean, you got 5-star ratings. So obviously, and there's, I mean, everybody seems to be stoked about the book. They're happy. So I think that's really speaks a volumes about the book itself and about the writing. So you said you're working on that book. And then where do you see the series going next?
I've written book 3. That's with my editor. That's the history of the space race, how we got to the moon.
Okay.
Because we've got the current space race getting to Mars is just being written as we speak.
Cool.
So I can't write about that yet, which is a shame. I'd really like to. But sort of it would end halfway through. So doing a space race of the moon. I've wanted to do a really cool story talking about, it's not part of the Sebastian Alien sequence series. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new one. It's going to be for middle grade for kids between 8 and 12. And I've started writing it for National November Novel Writing Month in November, if you know of it.
Yeah.
And I've about halfway through, and it's all about a comet going through space, talking about how solar systems usually have more than one sun. Mm-hmm. Ours is actually an anomaly, and it's believed that Jupiter was meant to be a sun and just failed somehow. But most star systems have three stars in them.
Yeah.
Some have two, some have four. I want to talk about that and make it exciting and part of an adventure. I want to talk about black holes and pulsars and all the cool things that I can't really write in a picture book because it's too complicated.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing is timing wise, I think we're in a really cool part of our society in 2020 where we see with Elon Musk and all the different SpaceX programs and every country doing its own little space program and different experiments right now going on. I think we're at a really good, back when I was growing up, we had the Challenger space shuttle and all those were, NASA was just a really fun thing to follow. And I think it's really cool that now in 2020, again, we have our space programs picking up traction, which really, again, indulges the mind of young kids, helps the imagination grow. But at the end of the day, it pushes the limits of where us as a race can move forward in the solar system and kind of explore things that we really don't know about. Really interesting that we're in that day and age now of where your books coincide with exactly what's going on with the space programs that are being reinvented.
Yep. It's the first time that anything I've liked has ever been in vogue. I'm very happy.
you've jumped right into the fad ahead of time.
Oh, yes. But no, it's really good. It's a fascinating time to sort of learn about things. My kids have seen so many space launches recently.
Mm-hmm.
They just assume this is, regular.
Yeah. It's hard to explain. Like this has just been going on since the dawn of time,
And I'm just like, did you know the first one was in the 60s?
Yep.
Explaining this stuff. And they're just like, they don't believe me.
Yeah. They're like, no, it had to have happened before that.
Yeah. Just like, when your grandmother was born, no one had ever been to space. No one even had a TV. And they're just like, no, that's not possible.
I think it's really, from a kid's point of view, from when I was growing up when NASA was real big and I remember right where I was when the space shuttle exploded. I remember, all those things that went on that kind of slowed the progression of the space system exploration going on. But I find it really cool that we have, people don't understand. We have a space station that's just hovering around the planet right now with people in it. While we're down on Earth with all our little calamities and our pandemics and our, the society's falling apart, there's like a bunch of human beings floating around in space that we don't even acknowledge. They have to eat, they have to have oxygen, they have to have supplies, and they're floating around the world right now. And it's like, that amazes me. It's just really cool. You know, I think every kid at some point thought, man, I'd love to be an astronaut. But I was thinking the other day to myself, and I was like, those poor people in space right now with our planet and everybody arguing and being silly, it would be horrible to be an astronaut right now, because you'd be up there going, I wonder if they're going to bring us anything. How are we getting down from here?
You've got a point. I've never thought of that.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking it the other day. I was like, there's poor people up there. We, some of us down here on Earth, we got our own little problems and world going on. But at the end of the day, those people up there with, you got the Russians up there, China's got their own crew up there. We've got the United States in the middle of the whole thing set up for international, discovery. And it's like, wow, those poor people up there, like, they have no clue the chaos that's going on down here. But yet they're probably up there going, man, they better get it together down there. Because we really are we're hoping to get more food up here. It's really interesting to me. And I think also where our technology has taken us these days. I mean, obviously we have information in our phones at the drop of a hat. We could just jump on our phones and find all kinds of cool information really quickly. Very great, good resources. But I think technology, as far as space goes, is like, we pictured like Star Trek and all these, we got laser beams and we can teleport, and obviously we're not at that point, but it's amazing to think, or even give our kids the opportunity to have that same imagination we had growing up. Yep. To think it's possible.
Yep. That's what I want to do the most. I really want to inspire kids to become little scientists.
Yeah.
Definitely want them to be involved in science and see stuff. I mean, the series, I've got the first three series about space. The next three are going to be about the human body. And I've got the next three books after. I have written lots of books already, just drafts. Yeah. The next few books are about the earth, volcanoes, earthquakes, the clouds, the sky, how this all happens, why the sky is blue.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. So they can sort of see all the different areas of science and decide which one they like and hopefully follow. I make no apologies that I want to turn all of our kids into scientists. None whatsoever.
I think that's a good thing. I mean, at the end of the day, knowledge is key. I've been a big fan of learning. I've always been that way. I taught English for a little while. I enjoy learning new things. I enjoy doing new things and trying out different things outside of my comfort zone. But at the end of the day, it's really, to me, I think we've seen a pattern in society. We hear all the time about these kids that are, their parents kind of give them a cell phone or give them whatever at any age, or they have video games and they just stay playing video games all day long. And you have kids that don't even go outside anymore to play. Yeah. And to me, that's so damaging. It's really counterproductive to helping the future of that child. Not just using their imagination, but actually learning productive, healthy things that can at the end of the day, help them as in their adult life, survival skills, if you will. And I think, part of that is exactly what you just said, making little scientists out of kids. Because what is the basis of science? I mean, we look at something, we get an idea, we come up with a theory. And if all of our children are always looking at the world from a perspective of an interest in something, and then getting a theory behind, let me dissect this further and see what it makes it tick and how I can either improve it or understand it, I think is very key. It's a very positive thing to teach our children and step them away from the video games and step them away from the staring at screens.
You're preaching my language, dude. The number of times I tell my kid this, there'll be my son likes playing computer games.
Yeah.
He has to read books. He has to do writing, yep, do math, and recite some French in order to get 15 minutes of fun.
I love it. I love it. So that's funny, because my son, who's now 12, he probably thinks me and my wife are nutbags.
Oh, yeah.
We have every, we've got every video game system in the house. And he honestly, I don't know that he's had this entire year. I don't know that my son's had 2 hours on anything video game wise, to be honest. He does not have a phone. He will not be getting a phone anytime soon. I don't just put on apps on my phone and games and hand it to him and say, here, we're in the waiting room of the doctor. You can just stare at my screen. I make him understand that, you know, there's a moral code. You got to have your manners. If you're in a waiting room, you wait patiently. You respect the people in the room. You don't make noises and, you know, run around the room. And so we've kind of, we're kind of a dying race or a weirder type of parenting because we don't do that. And we a lot of his friends are like, oh, you know, have you played Fortnite or one of these new games? And they mention these games and Devin's like, yeah, I've seen it. I've heard about it on TV, you know, but I don't have an account and I don't play on them. And the kids kind of look at him like, what kind of weird kid are you? But I'll tell you what, my kid, he reads thick, almost dictionary sized books at 12 years old. He doesn't ask to go play video games. He doesn't ask for the typical things kids do. When he wants to go do something alone or wants to just go in his room, he'll ask us, can I go read my book? And he's got a million books and he's in different series that he's in, kind of like I do. But he's like, that's his thing. When he really wants to do something and he's excited about it, that's what it is. He'll come to us and he's like, Hey, can I play inside today? And can I go in my room and read my book? And that's like his go-to. Now, at the same time, he does extracurricular activity. I mean, he does jiu-jitsu. He's been doing national. Last year, he competed twice. This year, he's competed once. He's got one this weekend coming up. So he does jiu-jitsu and martial arts and stuff. And he's really good and he excels at that. And part of it, you know, I tell my wife, part of it, I think, is because we've given him an opportunity to have a good attention span.
Yep, definitely.
You know, versus other kids are out there and they're focusing on when they're going to get home to the video game. He's out there actually trying to learn what they're teaching him. It's interesting, the dynamic of how parenting can really work on a kid.
I found I'm different. I recently found out I'm autistic.
Yeah.
And I'm not really much into the silliness.
Right.
So I'm not going to just let them watch TV and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If they want to watch TV, they have to earn it.
Right.
Do other things. I mean, my daughter just turned 3 today. She's already read two baby books. Mm-hmm. She's learning how to read just because she's interested in it, and being autistic, we're very passionate about stuff, so if she likes something, it's like, I will help you, I will throw myself mm-hmm. into helping you to learn it myself,
so
we can both do it. And I think she may be autistic too. It's a bit too early mm-hmm. to tell.
Yeah,
I'm hoping she is. It'd be nice to have another one in the house.
You know, my cousin out in Oregon, her son is autistic. We knew from basically when he reached a certain age, we knew they diagnosed him. And this was, you know, early 2000s. I mean, this has been quite a few years before it really took off, where the awareness of autism was there, where we were still at a point in our society back in late 90s, early 2000, where people were misunderstanding these kids and not really gauging that there was a real issue there, or it was being dismissed as autism wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
And so she's been blessed to be the mother of him. And he has just, he's now, I believe he'll be 18 this year. Kid's an amazing kid. He has his cool little quirks, that are just his thing. It's just, you know, but he's the most loving, caring kid. He's super smart, very talented. He draws. He's a good artist. He plays guitar. He does different music stuff. He writes his own songs. It's just really, really talented kid. And it's just really interesting that every kid, obviously, everybody learns differently.
Yes.
And with my son, you know, this year, even before the pandemic started, we decided to homeschool this year. We thought, you know, he's been in public school. We're not very impressed with the public school system. And we finally said, you know what, as much as we both will be probably pulling our hair out, let's go ahead and try and homeschool him this year. And so we did. And so far this year, he's done amazing. He's in sixth grade. They just tested him out for the whole entire year. He just did all his testing, and they are now going to move him up to like eighth grade level on some things. Math is one of his top subjects. I can take him to a store and he's like a calculator. I can spit out numbers and he will throw the answer out before I can type it in my phone. He's just really good. And so part of it, I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back yet, but I feel like part of it was because we didn't just hand him the TV and remote and we didn't just give him the video games to stare at. We actually forced him to learn what society's about at his age. We put him in real situations with us. He's usually with us all the time. So he gets to interact and engage with situations that a typical kid these days would not.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting, you know, really interesting to watch him grow and learn, and then to watch his little mind, like your books, you know, his mind kind of goes to like, well, I need to learn about that.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to Barnes and Noble, the store, the brick and mortar store, we'll go in there and he goes to the kids section and he'll sit down on the floor, grab a book he likes, and he'll start reading it in the store while we're shopping. He's just that kid, and he'll find a topic in his head. And he's stuck on it. And he's like, I got to learn about it. And he'll go to the, we'll go to the store and he'll find a book on it. He'll look in that section and he'll read it. And he wants to, and he asks for us for more knowledge. And I think it's just great to see kids like that.
Oh, definitely. My son is so much like that as well. Mm-hmm. He's only 4 and a half. And he's always been like that. I remember when we were potty training, he'd be sitting on the toilet and just going, so where does it go? Just like, I just go in the toilet. But where does it go after that? Uh-huh. How does it get there? And you just sort of having to discuss, you know, have to learn about the plumbing system and gravity works and stuff for it. But he's exactly the same. And
I think those are all great opportunities to teach.
Yep. Everything is. I really wanted to homeschool him. Mm-hmm. He is massively extroverted.
Mm-hmm.
And lockdown was really depressing for him. He was genuinely.
I think for a lot of kids, it has been.
Yeah, he really likes other kids, really mm-hmm. needs them. Which is why I've let him go to school.
Yeah.
But he's a little bit ahead of the others, mainly because he's got me there teaching him science from birth mm-hmm. and teaching him how to read. So he's a year ahead of the other kids of reading.
Yeah.
Just because, well, I'm a writer. I'm going to teach my kids how to read.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you know, we've had a lot of teachers step up to us in public. When he was in public school, we had a lot of teachers step up to us and they're like, you know, he kind of gets in trouble a little bit. He does. He finishes his work early, and then he's messing around with the other kids while they're trying to finish their work. He's a real distraction at times, and I'm like, we'll give him harder work.
Exactly.
Your other option is move him up a grade.
Yep.
So that it's more challenging for him. And a lot of your public schools these days, I know when I was growing up, you'd hear a lot of kids move up in grades, you know, and nowadays they just don't want to do that. They want to kind of keep all the kids have to learn the same thing, the same pattern, all have to stay in the same grade. And I think, you know, when you get to the point where your education system is just stamping kids out like cattle, I think there needs to be a dynamic change. And that's why one of the reasons me and my wife were like, well, we're just not comfortable seeing the way they're pushing him and not really pushing him, not engaging him to really utilize his imagination. Instead, they're kind of hindering a little bit and saying, this is all you need to learn. You don't need to learn anymore. This is all the time you have in a day. Yep. And we just thought, man, that's really restrictive. So now he does, I mean, he homeschools, he does 2-3 hours, if that, with breaks. He does that on the computer, which is really his only screen time. He interacts with his teachers. He has a few Zoom meetings, but that's really it. And then when he's done, he gets his homework done. He has writing assignments and journaling. He likes to journal.
Wow.
He just does that stuff. He'll write about his day and 2-3 pages. One day he'll fight us on it and like, I don't want to journal today. And the next day he's writing a book and you're like, you know, what was yesterday about? But that's just the nature of how he is. And some days he has good days and bad days like any kid. And, but it's truly amazing. You know what you're doing, because you are engaging kids through your books, through your writing, to want to learn and to teach them that you know. And again, through the series of books, you're teaching them that there's not just a solar system. There's things in the solar system that you can learn about on a whole separate level.
Yep, that's what I want to do. I didn't actually realize I was autistic until recently, because the mother. Mm-hmm. of a child who has autism, she said it's written perfectly. It's written like it's aimed at autistic children.
Yeah.
And it made me realize people have been saying I'm autistic for ages. Let me get it checked. And I was.
Yeah.
But looking into it and investigating more, apparently any kind of classroom thing, any book that's aimed at autistic children,
mm-hmm.
it works well for everybody. It helps everyone learn. If we have a special needs classroom and a normal mainstream school classroom, if we would change that normal mainstream school classroom to look like the special needs one, all those kids thrive. And there have been many experiments done which have shown that everything that works for autistic kids really helps every kid.
Yeah, you get the same or more effectiveness out of the same stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So the book, which is really good for autistic kids, it's really good for non-autistic kids too. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they're nice and simply explained so that there's no confusion, nothing complicated, nice and easily explained, and just goes into the bare bones that will get them excited about it.
Very cool.
Flight About Space. I mean, I was a tutor for about 5 years, helping kids from 5 to 16. And yeah, I found that I could explain any concept within science or math really easily to make any kid learn. I mean, famously, mm-hmm. I was teaching two kids at 15 and their younger brother at 11, and they're all doing exactly the same level.
Yeah.
Because once you explain the bare bones and the foundation, everything becomes easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I want. Explain the bare bones so that it becomes easy. They delight in it. And they get passionate about it.
Yeah, for sure. It amazes me. So you have the three books, and then you'll be working into a new series.
Yep.
Are you planning this to be like this? You found your calling, and now as an author, now you're hoping to just continue this as your calling?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've always loved writing from a very young age, making stories up from about age 6, 7. But you sort of, as a grown up, you hit about 18, 19, you're like, I can't make a career out of this. And you talk yourself mm-hmm. out of it.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, you know, I've got nothing to lose. I'm writing this for my kids. If no one but my kids read it, that's fine. But other kids are reading it. Other kids are liking it. And it's like, I'm just going to carry on.
Yeah. And it's encouraging.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep on writing for as long as kids keep reading and as long as kids keep wanting to learn. And kids always want to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's awesome. Well, you know, it's been great having you on here. We would love to have you back when you get the next book out. We can get you back on here to talk about the next book. Of course, we want to always, you know, any guests we get on, we always invite them to come back and promote, you know, the things they got to promote as authors. I know sometimes it's never ending for we get a lot of authors that are like, hey, we got another book out. And I'm like, didn't you just come on last week? And they're like, yeah, you know, but we're ready to promote this one. And we're okay with that. We're good. We want our audience engaged, not just in the material that we're promoting, but we also want our audience engaged in you, the guest and the author, to get more familiar. And the only way to do that is really to have you come back. And that way our audience gets to know you as a person, you on our show. And then they get to recognize your name as an author, which also helps them share. And that's the best part of this platform that I love, is that I have the opportunity to give you a platform to promote. And I also have an opportunity to help our audience. And at the end of the day, that is one of the bases of our show. And you had mentioned earlier, you've listened to a couple of the episodes. Mm-hmm. So you're probably familiar that I'm a big promotion. I promote huge self-help. I promote big mm-hmm. self-improvement. Yep. One of the biggest things I promote is helping others. And that's something I do in my daily walk every day. I encourage everybody, you know, we never know what someone's going through. There's people suffer from suicide, depression. There's so many different mental disorders that people suffer from, and we have no clue. And you can be the most successful person in the world, but just empty inside. And so I always encourage everybody to help each other, give a smile, give a compliment, hold a door. If you're in a drive-thru and there's a car behind you, purchase the meal for them behind you and drive off and don't worry about it. Do kind things to help other people. You don't know what someone's going through.
Yeah.
And I know with this pandemic, I know it's been very difficult for a lot of people. I've lost about 8 people this year. I just got news yesterday of a 9th person that's in the hospital. And so it's been really a hard year, not just for me, but for the families of those that have passed this year. What is some good advice you can give our audience that maybe in a situation in your life where you've had some ups and downs, something that helped pull you through maybe a depressed time or just an anxious time in your life?
It's temporary. That helps me more than anything. It's temporary. It will get better.
Mm-hmm.
Good times go bad and the bad times, they go good. Sometimes mm-hmm. that temporary can be months, sometimes years, but it will always get better. And I say that as someone who's been through stuff in the past, it does always get better. I'm in a good place now and I'm really lucky. Thank you, God, for this.
Yeah.
I thank God a lot. I really do every day. He's getting thanked. But I also know that this is it could also be temporary. Anything bad could just happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't dwell on that. It's just things are going great now. And if things do go bad again, they'll get better too. Everything is temporary.
I think that's important. You're probably one of the first guests I've heard actually use that, just the word temporary. And that is so, so real, because everything is, and I just, before I had you on, I had another guest interview that I was doing with a gentleman, Dylan, and he didn't say temporary, but he said kind of along the same lines, he said, everything changes.
Yep.
And there's no need to hang on to or dwell on things that in this moment we're in and the next moment we're not. And it's very important. Temporary, that's a very good way of putting it, or trying to help explain to people that this is, anything you're going through in life is temporary.
Yep.
And you don't have to dwell on it. You don't have to hold on to it. I think the most encouraging thing to me is to know nowadays, A, that I have the ability to help somebody, but B, when somebody actually reaches back out to me and lets me know, I don't need the recognition and I don't want to know that something I did, that's not why I do what I do. But when someone reaches out and they say, I'm in a better place now. And it was after that talk we had.
That's lovely.
And I'm like, that's not what's important to me. I'm glad you're in a good place, but I'm glad to hear moments like that where one person was changed by a conversation I had. One person was able to step out of maybe an abusive relationship or maybe just no matter what the situation may be that they're going through, they were able to step back from it and say, you know what, this is temporary. This is something that I can get through. I know more and more we hear with this pandemic and the lockdowns and the craziness in our world right now that, a lot of people just don't have coping skills. They don't have really good coping skills for mental health or... This is the first time as a society we've dealt with something at this level. And I think a lot of people don't know how to handle it because it is a first.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of people, whether you have mental health issues, depression, suicidal thoughts, I think even people that have pretty much considered healthy minds are struggling right now because this is all new. And I think it's really important that we just, more than ever, we engage each other in intentional conversation. We be grateful for the people in our lives and we continue to remember to live in the moment because like you said, even the good is temporary, so if you want to really have a happy life and you want to really engage in the good because down the road, there might be some bad. And so it's real important to be engaged in the moment.
Yep. I also think that our schools should do a little bit more in helping us. Mm-hmm. We sort of come out of school with no idea, with no real coping skills, no emotional intelligence skills,
mm-hmm.
no idea how to budget. That might be different in America.
No, it's the same here. We like to call it here the dumbing down of America because our public education system is continuing to fail.
Yep. I think what they need to do is really overhaul it and make sure that people know how to get back in a good place, how mm-hmm. to cope when they are in a bad place, how to not expect, have unreal expectations of what life is.
Yep.
And just Disney and fairy tales do not help with that.
No. Rainbows and unicorns are beautiful, at the end of the day, but they really don't solve problems. And while like we've discussed this whole episode, it's great to encourage the youth to have great imaginations and think. There's also a very real time where you have to teach reality and you have to teach that there's wins and losses in life.
Yep.
And how to cope with the winning emotions and how to cope with the losing emotions, as well as the just like I over E, the winning intellect and the losing intellect, because it's all a balance. And we, in order to really gain knowledge into, and I think if you know from listening, I always encourage self-reflection because that's the journey I'm on right now. And so it's real important to have that balance of knowing where your emotions are, knowing where your intellect it lines up. And if your coping skills and tools can get you through that. And it starts off, for me, it always starts off by looking in the mirror. And I started that many years ago, but that journey has never ended. Up to this day, I still wake up and I have to look in the mirror and say, yesterday was this good or was this bad? Is this something I want to carry into today and the future? Or is it a character defect I can get rid of? And is this something I enjoy and love about myself or hate? And it's not about love hates as much as it is about being a better person, being a better dean to my family, a better husband, a better a father, a better person to the people I reach each day. And that's what's important, that self-reflection, that self-assessment each day. Because I think sometimes in society we get complacent. And a lot of people, they just go to work 9 to 5, they come home, they got to get dinner on the table, they, you know, let's read and spend some time with the kids, and then it's bedtime. And then we get up and we do it all over again. And that process can continue. Life is too short to have a routine like that and go through 30 years of raising kids and to do that cycle. And we've, as a society, we've just kind of ingrained ourselves that that's the way it happens. My grandparents went to work and that's what they did. My parents did it. But I think we can step out of the comfort zone, and we're in a day and age where we can explore a little bit more. We have a little bit more flexibility. And I think taking, you know, a lot of people look at the pandemic as it's been such a bad thing. I've kind of looked at it as it's given me an opportunity and a lot of people an opportunity to really do things because of the downtime, to do things they've never had time to do and look and try things they've never had time to.
Yep. I mean, I tried doing that during the pandemic. It wasn't possible. I still had, I was very lucky my work managed to continue, but I also got to spend more time with my kids and seeing them progress. I teach them stuff and seeing them learn it and understand it. It was a very incredible feeling. It's, don't want to toot my own horn, but it's like, whoa, I taught them something. This is incredible. It stuck.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a buzz from teaching them and you sort of want to teach them more.
It's time management. You know, at the end of the day, it's if we have 10 minutes with our kids, we can have 10 minutes arguing about them picking up their room, or we can have 10 minutes where, like you're saying, you can engage them with intelligent conversation, which helps them learn.
At the end of every day, I sort of have some time with my son. I'm trying with my daughter. She's just turned 3 today, so she's not quite there yet. But with my son, it's like, what are you most proud of that you did today? Mm-hmm. What are you most... what are you upset about? What do you think could have been handled differently? What made you unhappy? What could we do about it in the future? And so that way he sort of goes to bed knowing tomorrow is another day, brand new day, and it's going to be sort of a more positive thing. Mm-hmm. And if something has been sad, we can discuss it, talk about it, and get in a better place rather than him going to bed with those thoughts in his head and just goes to bed feeling today is over.
Yeah, tomorrow relieved. Is a new day. Just I takes the weight right off, yeah.
Yeah.
And it also gives you that, as a parent, it makes that bond and that communication to your kid that you can review. They can confide in you and review what yesterday's problem was in case it carries into today. And you can say, well, remember we talked about this yesterday and this is how you felt yesterday about it. How do you feel about facing it today? And I think that's a great idea, you know, to spend the end of the night to kind of wind things down with getting into your kid's head, learning what they're thinking, learning what bothers them, what their fears are, because at the end of the day, even when we become adults, one of the biggest stumbling blocks for most adults is fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of things we're scared to do or jump out off the cliff and do. Sometimes it's confidence, but it all boils down, whether it's self-confidence or, you know, we just don't feel we're good enough. It all boils down to fear. At the end of the day, we're scared of something we don't know.
Yep. Count the number of times you stay in the wrong job just because you're afraid to try and go for the real one.
Yeah. There's so many people stuck in a job that they because they're scared to do the promotion, or they're scared to ask for the raise, or they're scared if they lose that job and go to another job, it may not work. And fear can leave people stuck in a bad situation for too long. Life is just so short. You know, I preach that a lot on here. Is life is just too short. I'll be 45 in February, and I keep making jokes like, hey, I'm halfway there. I'm almost dead. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's kind of true. And while I feel good, I'm healthy. I feel the best I've felt in a long time, physically, mentally, and spiritually. But at the end of the day, I know, you know, I'm not getting any younger. My son's, he's getting older, and the time I get to spend with him is getting less and less. And that's the same with my wife. You know, if my son were to move out at 18, if we got that lucky, cross our fingers, and he got a job in an apartment and he moved out at 18 and everything was great, happy dory, it would be me and my wife. And that would be, that's great. But there's so much opportunity we miss now. Those short moments that we can engage in and know, like, we didn't waste time. you know, yep. And it's so important to make memories. And if those memories are encouraged by learning, there's nothing better than when you hear, when you get older and you hear your kid out in the world and they're like, somebody asks them a question, they know the answer. And then they say, well, where did you learn that? And they say, I heard it from my dad or my mom, you know, like, that's so cool to hear. I've heard my son a couple times do it. And I'm like, well, that's cool. I taught him something at least, you know, like I felt good about it, but it is very encouraging to know, like in your position where you're able to teach science and teach things to them that they will hold on to and be able to share with others.
No, we love doing science experiments, talking about chemicals. They all know they both know the periodic table, the first like 15 elements.
Yeah.
So much stuff. We engage about what the different elements can do, how the elements are made. We've been very geeky. We use Lego pieces to make quarks, to turn them into electrons and protons to make hydrogen atoms.
That's cool.
Just to give them an understanding, because kids do want to know how the world is made. They want to know it at this age.
Yeah, you have to present it to them in a way they can understand it. And Legos is a great way.
Yep, they loved it. They loved it. They were sort of like going around just telling people, oh, we made quarks yesterday, you know, out of Legos, and we made the hydrogen atom. And I'm just like, yes, you go around telling people that to go broadcast it to the world.
That's awesome. Well, tell us, tell the audience where we can find, your book, the easiest available place for them to purchase. Tell us any other places you want, websites or social media, wherever they can find you.
The best place to get it, I guess, would be Amazon. It's in all of the different Amazons around the world. This book is called Let's Visit the Solar System. And my name is Dunia Stewart - McMeel. You'll never spell that, so fine. But Let's Visit the Solar System. It's the only one there. I do check. Yep. It's fun to sort of Google myself every now and again.
Right.
I have my own website. It's learningexcitement, all one word, .co.uk. And you can also find me on Facebook under facebook.com/learningexcitement. I do have a Twitter handle. I think it's learn2excite. That pretty much do it. But if you try doing a Twitter for hashtag learningexcitement, I will also come up because I like to hashtag myself too.
Okay, perfect. And we will link for our audience listening, we will link all of this to this episode. So we'll have that information in the description of the episode. It has been great having you on here. And again, like I said, we will have you back on in the future when your next book comes out. Give us just touch base with us. We'll get you back on here. We'll discuss that book.
Oh, wow. Thank you. It's been amazing being here. Thank you. I was really nervous, but it's just been a really nice, lovely conversation.
That's what I like to do. That's what I like to do. Sometimes I get a little off track because, again, like we talked about, a little adult ADD with me.
Yep.
but at the same time, I enjoy the conversation. I really genuinely enjoy talking to people, and you're one of the guests I enjoyed having this conversation with.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed this. It's been great. This is my first podcast, and I love it.
Excellent. Well, it will be your first of many then. So we'll have you back.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Yep.